Welcome to Abound in Hope, a podcast from Imprint Church. Our goal is to help you see how the gospel of Jesus Christ intersects with our daily lives and compels us toward gratitude and generosity.
Welcome back to Abound in Hope. I'm Ben Acone. Super glad that you're listening today. Today is historic, I might say, because we're starting a few-week series on this podcast about discipleship in the life of the church. And so today we're going to be focusing on family discipleship, how maybe parents can intentionally lead their kids closer to Jesus. So I've asked a couple friends to come in and share on family discipleship, people I know who have thought about this before, who have kids who are older than mine and who have been through more than I have. And so I want to introduce them. Here to my right, as you guys can all see, I've got Allison Peterson. Allison, how are you today?
Hi, I'm doing great.
Good. And to my left over here, I've got Seth Talbot. Seth, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's so good to have you here. I wonder if we can just start by maybe you guys kind of introduce yourself. Let us know about your families, how many kids you have, how old they are. And even tell us a little bit about yourself. If you work, where do you work? How long have you been married? All that sort of stuff. So, Allison, you want
to
start
us? All right, I get to take it away. My name's Allison Peterson, and I have three kids. So David is 9, almost 10. Jacob just turned 8, and Hannah is 4.5. And the half is very important. If you don't get that part in, it's a bit of a disaster.
Well, I saw part of the celebration there. You guys had like a half birthday party.
Yeah, so every year for the kids' birthdays and half birthdays, they get a special date with mom and dad. And so I get the half birthdays, and then my husband John gets their birthdays, and we go all out. We do crazy stuff. So this year with the coronavirus and shutdowns and everything, we had to really kind of shift how we do that. But we had
no more Chuck E. Cheese.
Yeah, no more Chuck E. Cheese this year. But we did for my little girl this last week, we did a big tea party at home, and we dressed up in princess clothes, and we did makeovers and spa day at home. And so just something to try and make it really special for her. But anyway, so yeah, I've got those three kids, and I've got my husband, John. We've been married for 15 years. John and I have had just quite an adventurous life, I would say. We have been here at Imprint for 3 years. But before that, we moved about close to a dozen times all around the country, all around the world, just following different dreams and opportunities as they came up. And so we feel really fortunate that this is where we've landed, and we're here to stay to raise our family now. This is where John and I both grew up, and where most of our kind of extended family lives. And so it's really good to finally be home with our kids.
Awesome.
My kids this year, with everything going on and changing, we're going to be changing things up again. I'm calling myself the accidental homeschooler because I used to be a teacher. I taught kindergarten and first grade. But ever since we've had kids, I've stayed home with them full time. And I always swore up and down I would never homeschool my own children. And now this year we're going to go on round two of me homeschooling my own children. Yes. So here
Man
we are.
Man plans, God laughs. Yeah.
Exactly. I know. God has taught me time and time again, be careful what you wish for, and also never say never, because I think he has a better plan than I do. So this year we're going to delve into that again. We're going to homeschool this year. We're going to just see where life takes us, and so I'm open to it, and I'm excited to just kind of see where this year takes us. So that's a little bit about us.
That's awesome. Thank you for sharing. And Seth, tell us a little bit about your family too.
So I've been married to Jennifer for about 21 years, and we have 5 kids. We have.
Do you want to know how old I was when you got married? I was 4. Sorry, keep going.
Like, you kind of be over 21. I was trying to think if you were going to be like, I'm like the size of the coffee bean on the table or whatever. Anyways, so married about 21 years. We have 5 kids. We have 2 bio children that are 17 and almost 16. And then we have 3 adopted little fellows from China that are 9, 7, and almost 7. Hmm. And the 3 little guys all had medical, they were in the medical waiting child list. And so that was probably one of the more distinctive aspects of that for us through our child. So we have some big gaps, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we homeschool. We have for quite a few years.
That's awesome.
Yeah, quite a few years.
That's awesome. Well, I'm excited to get your guys' perspectives on some of these things, because I think, safe to say, most parents are moving into this next season fairly intimidated, even if you are like the Talbot family, who's homeschooled for a while. I imagine this season feels quite different than anything we've ever done before. Social events are limited. Sometimes support systems can be limited as well. And so I'm glad that we're able to kind of talk about family discipleship, because even though the circumstances and situations change. I almost got it. I bet you if I tried a third time, I'd get it.
Circum what?
Circumstances.
There it goes. For the win, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, man. This will be the weirdest podcast episode we've got.
I totally understand.
Yeah, thank you. Even though that changes, right, we still have this responsibility not only to God, but also to our kids, right, to raise them up well and to show them the way of Jesus and to lead them in a path of maturity and a path of joy. And so I'm glad we're talking about this. Don't feel like if you're listening to this, we're going to be talking about family discipleship as we see it. And I think there's a lot of different temperaments to each family, right? And there's a lot of different personalities for each kid. And so maybe something that works for Seth doesn't work for Allison, or maybe something that works for Allison doesn't work for me, or whatever it may be. But we want to really highlight the picture of what family discipleship might look like and share how we've tried to disciple our families in the process. And so I wonder, can we start by sharing, what does family discipleship even mean, right? This is a term that we've used at Imprint for a while now, and I don't know that we've ever actually sat down and defined it. And so as you guys understand it, when you hear family discipleship, what does that mean to you guys?
Go ahead.
Okay. For me, family discipleship kind of has two parts. There's the explicit and then the implicit. So the explicit is what we're teaching, what we're telling them, what we're reading to them, just direct instruction to them in being a disciple and a follower of Jesus. And then there's the implicit side that's more, how do I live my life? What actions are they seeing me do that lives out my faith that they're witnessing and experiencing every moment of every day? And so I think discipleship, especially in the context of a family and with children, it has to have both aspects. It has to have the direct, here, we're going to read the Bible, we're going to study God's word, we're going to pray together. But it also has that implicit thing that is not anything that ever was written in a book or taught to them, but they just get to live and experience every day.
Yeah, that is totally true.
Yeah, I think I certainly agree with that. That's a great way to define it. I think the way that I look at it is that there's outcome-based versus shepherding of the heart. So there's the, you know, the coaching that you do with your child where you're trying to point them to Jesus and draw them into a relationship versus outcome-based where you're focused more on behaviors. I think a lot of people were raised probably in environments where it was largely outcome-based, be it being a Christian family or not. And so, you know, you punish behaviors. You often don't punish heart conditions, you know. And so I think the way that I felt drawn myself as a young parent, I remember the people that had the biggest influence in my life having won the battle of showing me that they were for me. So when I look at discipleship, one of the chief tangible goals is that you kind of fight to get on the same page so the child knows you're for them.
Yeah.
Because if you think of like effective coaching, which parenting largely is, a good coach, they typically have the prototype is that they are rooting for the student or the child, but they're willing to push them hard in a way that they may not understand. And so making sure that the child knows that you're for them, I think, is the gateway for being able to have those difficult conversations. And that has especially shown to be the case through the adoption things that we went through. Because, you know, we brought in each of the children at different ages, not very, very different ages, but still different ages, where Eric had just turned two, little Mike was just turning three, and then little Jimmy was five. And you could imagine that those are very different states in bringing someone into the family. And one of the singular things I was focused on was planting repeatedly in their mind through repetition and affection that I am for them.
Yes.
Using possessive language so that they know that they belong, but then there's that I am for you, I am for you. And it's been something that, because I experienced as a child, seeing that with youth ministry or whatever, and then I experienced as the child itself through youth ministry, it kind of became natural. And it was amazing to see how that really worked, especially on our youngest, who was the most recent adoptee in the family, because he knows I'm for him. And it was easy. It was tangible to see. So I think discipleship for me looks something like that, where you're pointing people to Jesus, but you have to do it in a way where they know that you're wanting it for them, and that there's something there that they're missing. And it's not that you're embarrassed about their behavior because of what it makes you look like, or makes you afraid of, or ways that they remind you of someone in your life that's caused you problems or whatever it may be. Right. And so that's the kind of the lens that I think I've always looked through that helps me kind of identify what we're trying to accomplish. You know, if we keep that above, you know, we're pointing them to Jesus with us rooting for them, a lot of things kind of take care of themselves.
I like that a lot. And I like the difference of outcome-based versus kind of the shepherding model or something. And I think for so many of us, our mental picture in our mind is Ephesians 6:1 is the outcome that you should be looking for for your kids. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. And if I get my kids to obey, that's spiritual discipleship. That's family discipleship. And yet, when Paul prays for the churches that he's praying for, he's not just saying, well, God, I just pray that they would do the right thing for once. He's praying like these massive, huge prayers. There's one in Ephesians 4:13 that comes to mind. He says he's talking about how God's given people, the evangelists, the shepherds, the teachers, the prophets, the apostles, that maybe include the parents, to equip the saints for the work of the ministry, for building up the body of Christ. And here's his outcome for this church is, until we all attain to the unity of faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to mature manhood, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. Right? Like that's Paul's outcome for the church, is the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ.
And so just little things.
Right, totally. It's like, oh my gosh, if I'm trying to parent my children into the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, obedience isn't the only thing that I'm looking at there, right? I'm looking at their whole self, and I'm...
Except that the lack of obedience is what you feel.
Yes, it's the symptom.
Which is why we tend to respond to that part of it. Because that's the thing that's making you have to pull the child out of Target against their will.
Yes.
Or trying to get them in the car seat and they don't want to be buckled, or they're unbuckling on the road, and because it's that disobedience that you tend to respond to, because it's what embarrasses you or creates the trauma.
Yeah.
So
totally true.
You tend to respond and parent naturally out of just that corrective action.
Yep.
That's where you get stuck.
I will add too, I see discipleship as an act of worship for me. And when I take the focus off of my kids and their behavior and I bring it back to me and what I can do. And, you know, even in those hard times when the kid's unbuckling and you're driving down the freeway, you know, if you bring it back to yourself and, wow, how can I honor God in how I respond to this right now? It helps kind of shift everything. So
yeah,
I totally would encourage people, if they're wondering, you know, how can I incorporate more family discipleship? Just think of it from your own perspective first. How can you worship God through your actions and the way you're living?
Well, I also think too that part of it is, I think we tend to talk down to our children in a way where we treat them younger than they are. And I think we've seen a lot of the effects of delayed adolescence, right? Where we've got the classic thing, it's like the 20-year-old guy that's acting like a 14-year-old, which is pretty common now. I think part of that comes from we have really low expectations, but we don't talk to our children honestly and directly. And one of the things that we started to do is talk to them probably younger than most about what was really happening. And I'm not talking about like world events and, you know, the weird you know, things that would be inappropriate for children to be exposed to, but about what's actually happening in their heart. Mm-hmm. And that, like, gospel language and what we're really concerned about. So instead of focusing on, again, the outcome or these behaviors that are troubling, where we see, be it deception or manipulation or selfishness, whatever it is, expressing to them why we're concerned about it and what trajectory that looks like they're on, so that they understand why you're concerned. I think a lot of times it's hard to have those conversations. It's not natural to be able to pull your child aside and say, I'm really concerned about this because I see you doing this. And yeah. I don't know if you realize where this goes, but we've seen that.
Right.
And so we're really concerned because you think that you've dealt with it by just saying sorry quickly, but you clearly haven't, because this is clearly a stumbling block that's going to be a theme that you're going to wrestle with. Mm-hmm. And the people that don't bring this to Jesus and don't let Jesus redeem this run into some predictable problems that are quite isolating. And you need to, so having those kind of conversations, yeah. Helps, because it takes away the stop doing this, you know, don't do this, or you're going to be punished because of these kind of, again, it's kind of like the behavior driven responses, which again, feel naturalists, that if they don't see the big picture,
yep.
and if you don't talk to the children about the big picture, they just miss out on it. And then it does become, their behavior becomes outcome focused. And, you know, the one thing that I would talk to, and it's relevant to child rearing or any kind of discipling, is that, you know, we're really good at focusing on manufacturing fruit. And when I talked about the fruit of the Spirit, what people, I think, miss is that fruit is the plural, and that we're not supposed to be focusing on just being patient or more kind or having more joy or being whatever. It's that we're planted in these gospel deeps, and that fruit comes out of it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you find yourself being, you know, selfish, the answer is not being less selfish in pursuing a lack of being selfish. The answer is finding where you're rebelling against the Lord, mm-hmm. that it's expressing itself through that. And so that Psalms 1, where you're planted by the streams of deep waters, where that, like, that tree that's growing, and that's clearly a parallel of, like, that's where the fruit comes from, right. is that you're planting deep in the word of the Lord and in those gospel truths, and then the fruit comes. So I think you have to look at that the same way with your children too, is that if your child is being selfish or lying or whatever, there are far greater things at play. And to be able to tell them what the answer is, because I've found with a lot of the parenting situations that have been challenging, the child's as frustrated as you are. Mm-hmm. They feel as stuck as you are. And that pointing them to, okay, this is why Jesus really is the answer to all of these problems, because you're trying to just be more disciplined or more this or less of that, whereas the answer is that just pursuing Christ first, and that whole seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these yeah. things, you know, come after that. That's a strategy. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's actually a pretty good, quite literal roadmap of yeah. how these issues are resolved. And so pointing your children to, you know, if you're finding these repeated problems, you're obviously not pursuing the Lord with everything. And now you need to go find out why, because a lot of times we're deceived about that. So mm-hmm. where are you not pursuing the Lord? Why are you not trusting him? Where are you not believing in him? Where are you intellectually, you know, you believe in his goodness, but you don't experientially, yeah. you know, deeply believe it. And so that sort of like paradigm shift of outcome versus heart, that's yeah. where that starts to play out for us, at least in our family a lot.
And I start seeing discipleship as a lot less like half an hour during dinner time or something like that. You know, when I'm viewing this as this whole person, whole self formation, you start seeing it in the car, in Target, at home, doing the dishes, doing
whatever.
At the
most inopportune times.
Yeah, it's constant, you know, and it's the picture we get in Deuteronomy 6 of you're going to teach them to your kids when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way and when you lie down and when you rise, that this picture of Christ and who he is and our response to him is this whole life endeavor, you know, and I think it's helpful for parents to recognize it's not a 20-minute Bible study that mm-hmm. you can check off. You know, family discipleship is a whole person thing, so it includes the physical, right? We can disciple our kids by preparing them good meals or by allowing them to sleep well at night, you know, so then they're able to actually have the mental and physical ability to take joy in what God's created and all these different things. It's a mental thing. It's worshiping with heart, soul, strength, mind. And this requires a lot of us, you know, it requires just about everything that we as parents need to be willing to pour ourselves out a bit, because it won't be structured. And sometimes it may have to happen at 11 p.m.
It almost always for me happens when it doesn't work. And I think that was one thing that was, I think, hard to get used to, was that when you live a really, really busy life, it does not allow for effective discipleship. Mm-hmm. It doesn't. Because it takes, these conversations are not fast, mm-hmm. especially when they get older and the teenagers start acting like little mini adults. You know, these are hour and a half long conversations. And when you live, if you don't go into that with that expectation, you're going to not do it. Mm-hmm. You're just not, because you're going to deal with the behavior because there's something else you have to get to. And that was a real struggle for us, of being able to just put everything on pause because a moment is there that has to be addressed.
Yes.
And I wish someone would have told me that, frankly, because that took a while to figure out, you know, because you're just in the pace of the day and you've got to go to class, you got to get to school, you got to get to church, you got to do whatever you're going to do. Like, we've got to get the dishes done, we got to get the lunch, whatever it is. I don't have time for this. And this is exasperating, and it can be. It almost always for us is just at the wrong time.
Yep.
I guess another benefit of quarantine with COVID, we all have extra time to spend discipling our children and having conversations.
Yeah. You're going to be interacting with each other whether you like it
all
or not.
Day.
Yeah, totally.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, so as we get kind of a picture, here's what I wonder. So I wonder, when we talk about helping grow our kids into the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, or as we talk about this whole life endeavor that's both what we're explicitly teaching them and what implicitly we're showing them, it's happening at inopportune times. How would you guys counsel someone who feels really overwhelmed by that, and maybe not just overwhelmed, but feels discouraged? You know, maybe they work long hours, they're coming home emotionally drained, they feel like they don't have much of themselves to give. Can family discipleship happen there? What would you counsel someone who's coming to you going, I don't have 2 hours to randomly talk to my kid about issues, or if I do, I'm just so depleted emotionally that I'm not able to do this, or I don't have a firm grip on the Bible like I want to be able to teach my kids these things. What would you guys say to someone who's feeling overwhelmed by the picture of discipleship that we're giving?
I would say that discipleship can be more of a mind shift more than an item on a to-do list that you have to check off, right? So it's not something that you have to do in addition to living. It's part of the way that you are living. And so it should be happening, as you mentioned earlier, you know, as you're walking, as you're in your house, as you're sitting, you know, and it just is something that can happen in every moment of every day. Just off the top of my head, just some things that we do every time if we're driving and we hear a siren, we stop whatever conversation we're doing, whatever we're doing, and we just pray for whoever the people are going to help. And we pray for the people that are driving the fire truck or the ambulance. And that's just something that as we're driving down the road, we can just do. You know, like this summer, for instance, we've talked a lot about how we can show Jesus's love to our friends and our neighbors. And especially right now, with everything just being so up in the air and different, how important it is to really love our neighbors and our community and just kind of be present for them. And so we've, as a family, kind of helped plan some little things in our neighborhood. Like, we had an ice cream truck come a couple times and park in our neighborhood. And we made little summer fun packets for all the neighborhood kids with Play-Doh and coloring pages, and we went and dropped them off on our neighbor's doorsteps, and just getting my kids involved in some of these ideas that they've had to kind of live out that love of Christ in their life just on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of a cliche example, but you see a rainbow in the sky.
Right.
You talk about God's promises. And
well, that's what we're supposed to do. That's what rainbows are for.
What promise have you seen that God has had come true in your life? And we'll just stop and we'll just talk about it, you know, as we're doing whatever else we're doing. So it doesn't have to be this big thing that you've planned out and you take all this time out of your day for. It can just happen naturally. So just shift your mind to it does take practice to shift your mind that way though, mm-hmm. right? Like you have to consciously know, like, okay, I want to look for these things, and as those moments come up, be ready to have that conversation or be ready to point out that thing. And right. once you start paying attention though, I mean, those moments are every moment of every day. So totally. It doesn't have to be anything extra.
Well, and even in doing that, you're communicating something about who God is, right? Like right. if your only form of discipleship comes from, okay, sit down and listen to my thoughts about the Bible
yeah.
and then agree with them and don't distract your siblings, you're painting this picture of God of God's about you being serious, mm-hmm. right? And so yeah. if you want to be a real good Christian, get rid of your goofiness, your silliness, your whatever, and time to get really serious. But mm-hmm. when we see discipleship as caring for our neighbors, as, I don't know, going to the blueberry patch and delighting in nature and yeah. doing all sorts of things, we're able to give our kids a more robust picture of who God is, right?
Right.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah, and I mean, like, even just that last week, we were... My kids are learning multiplication, and one of my sons asked me, why does it follow this pattern? Why does it always go like this? I said, well, because God is a God of order. And then we started just looking around like, oh my gosh, look, the trees, their branches go in this order, and this flower has a pattern with the petals. I mean, and so you can just branch off on literally anything.
That's awesome.
And you can bring it back to God or Jesus, and you can just show them. I mean, God is his fingerprints, his imprint mm-hmm. is in every single thing in the world. So you can always bring them back to that.
That's awesome.
I think if I look at the people that I've talked to about this that struggle with it the most, kind of the reasons tend to fall into either equipping, intent, or margin, in that they don't have time for it. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at equipping, you know, someone who doesn't know how to point their child to Jesus because they're not, I guess, properly trained or equipped to really understand how to present the gospel's relevance to that situation. That's kind of one thing, right? And the mm-hmm. way you address that is get better equipped and be in the word and really look for what the gospel ties are into the sin. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you're struggling and you're afraid, is it because you don't trust in the sovereignty, the goodness, the plan, or you don't trust in God in a specific way? With intent, you know, I think a lot of the other people aren't really focused on it because it's not something that they're thinking about themselves. Like, they didn't come from a family where it was a priority, or they don't really see what, they just haven't seen examples of it and they don't know what they're doing. And so there's just that they don't think about that's something they're supposed to do for their child. And then with margin, there's the busyness and the tyranny of the urgent that yeah. that I think is more than rampant in our homes. And that's, mm-hmm. I'm talking about Christian homes where we're very good at creating these nice little Christian workers that are all about getting good grades and all these behavioral things and all these trophies and activities to try to equip for the world without actually showing the children how to navigate temptation and sin, and that there are going to be things that you're going to struggle with that you're not going to know what to do with. So yeah. what do you do when you're presented with a situation mm-hmm. that you don't know of anybody else struggling with?
Right.
You know, those sort of things. So there's that. If you don't have the margin because you're just so busy and you've structured your family life in a way where you're so busy, it doesn't allow for any interruption. That's a problem that is very solvable, mm-hmm. but it's just so normal. It doesn't look as unhealthy as it is because people are just living these really backwards lives.
Right.
And it's very clear that the most important thing to families at times is, and I think it's unconscious, frankly, but that's that we're going to be a successful in this culture Christian. And it, you know, successful is defined a variety of ways, be it being a great mm-hmm. musician or an mm-hmm. architect or an engineer or a musician, whatever it's going to be. We're really good at trying to focus our children on those particular outcomes. Mm-hmm. And when we do that and we have no margin, that's where you run into problems. And so one of the things that we really felt compelled, especially when we were adopting, was that we just weren't going to do things that we probably wanted to do with activities because we decided to slow it down. And it turned into a pace that was very healthy. And some of it just came because, you know, our second child specifically started having, well, came with medical complications, and the third, especially the case, with, you know, brain surgeries and whatnot. So, I mean, there have been seasons where we're just not doing stuff that mm-hmm. other families are commonly doing. Our kids are not involved in all these sports and all these extracurricular stuff. They're very social. We do stuff, but there's a bunch of stuff that we don't do.
Yeah.
But we have really, really good relationships with all of our children. And so there's this weird sort of contrast because, you know, I came home late last night. I don't normally work late, but we had this weird catastrophe that I had to solve last night. So it's the latest I think I've been out for a while. But I drove in the driveway. Now my oldest child, my teenager daughter, is literally in the driveway waiting for me. And that relationship only comes after just having a different pacing, frankly. Right. And obviously there's other things that contribute to it that some you can't control, mm-hmm. just to be really clear. But, you know, pacing matters where yeah. there's that relationship because we have a depth of relationship that absolutely would not be possible. So I made career changes specifically to try to be available. And then when we started adopting, we just changed our pace. Mm-hmm. And we look a little weird. We have a lot of very, very, very close friends. Thank you for that. Yeah. It's the shine off my head because of the sun in the back. But that, you know, we don't look like a normal family for that reason because other families, almost every family around us is far more engaged in stuff. And we're not critical of it. It's just that's what we did. And it just, I think it's enabled a richness in being able to do things because we're not always in a hurry.
Yeah.
And so we're less irritated when those unexpected things pop up.
Yeah. I will say we made a very conscious choice to do the same, to take a step back and slow down. And again, for my husband, career change, he was working for Apple in California. He was traveling at least 50% of the time for 1 year. He was literally out of the country more than he was in the country. We had to do our taxes. We had to record which country he was in. And our kids were young and it was hard on all of us. And we just sat down one night and we just talked and we said, we can't keep this up anymore. This is not healthy for our family. And literally the next day he started looking at what other opportunities we might have to find a better, you know, family balance where we would have that space in our family to have a better relationship with each other and with our kids and to take some of the burden off of each other. And God works really fast when you start praying for something like that, I will say.
Careful what you pray for.
Because we, within a month, moved states and new jobs and everything. I mean, it was just God opened the doors really wide when we prayed for that change. And so, and that's just another good reminder. I mean, just pray. If when in doubt, just stop and pray, whatever it is. I need direction, God. I need to know how to instruct my kids. I need to have a better relationship with my kids, whatever it is. Just pray. And he does answer every single time.
Yeah,
so
but I think it's interesting that I bet no one confronted you about how crazy your life was though. And that's one of the things that I also found.
They might have thought it.
Yeah.
See, but that's the thing. And that's what bothered me is that when I got off the crazy train, it bothered me that other people knew that, one, I was a little lost and that we were living a lifestyle that wasn't quite working well. And no one said anything. And I remember going, I remember honestly walking away from it, kind of going, so I was around people and, you know, I'm close friends and people saw craziness and said nothing. That really bothered me. Mm. And so it's not like I go around telling people I think their life is crazy because I actually haven't pulled anybody aside. But I found that sad that there was a clear problem in my life and a lot of people saw it and no one said a word except after I got my head out of the sand and we made those changes. So that was kind of weird for me. And it's like, wow, I was about to really parent really poorly for an extended period of time. And people saw it and said nothing.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's another good kind of point, too, is like being in community with other people is so important because maybe they will see something that
they can help
with.
I think you have to ask, though.
You have to ask. Sometimes, But if you don't have the relationship to start with, then it's hard to even get to that point.
Oh, for
so
sure.
Building community is also huge. And I mean, you know, the saying, you know, it takes a village. It literally takes a village to raise a family.
Totally
I can't imagine raising kids without the support system and the church and the family that we do have. So it's super,
and coffee.
Super important.
And coffee.
Lots of coffee.
Yeah. And I think what's cool, and I think we'll need to wrap up here soon, but I think what's cool is that when we see ourselves starting to engage more in family discipleship, we can then see the kind hand of God discipling us, you know, like
definitely
parenting tends to bring things out of you that's ugly and that's bad, that's discouraging. And yet, as we engage in prayer, right, if we're going to have our kids grow to the measure of the stature of the fullness of God, we aren't going to be able to do that ourselves. When we're engaging in community, engaging in prayer, we're going to see God richly filling us up, too, for the conversations that we are having, for the emotional energy that we need to give to our family. We'll see God caring for our every need. So if there's anyone out there who is feeling discouraged, I have more than enough confidence that God will give you what you need. God will provide for you as you provide for your kids. And I hope that you have a community and a group of people willing to pray for you, support you, encourage you, maybe rebuke you at times. And you can see the goodness of God in that. So guys, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank
we really
you.
Appreciate it. Allison, Seth, thank you for sharing. I'm praying that our church is known as a church that disciples their kids and values their kids a lot. So thank you, guys. Thank you, Imprint Church. Thank you, faithful listeners. And with that, we have to say goodbye. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. For more information and resources from Imprint Church, you can download our app or head to imprintchurch.org.